Today's podcast is brought to you by Visa, who wants to know, where would you like to be? Whether you're a super fan getting ready for a game or a food truck owner feeding hungry fans, Visa wants to help you pursue your passion with a simple and unwavering vision to be the best way to pay and be paid for everyone everywhere. They know that every Visa transaction is a promise, and they want to provide you with the most secure and easy payment experience possible. That's why they're continuing to make innovations, from tapping to pay to pushing money directly to your debit card so you can get to where you would like to be. Visa, everywhere you want to be.
Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today in the NFL. By now, you've heard the troubling story about the super successful longtime NFL assistant coach who is drawing lukewarm interest as a head coach. They say he doesn't look the part. He stands just 5'8". But he mentors an electrifying MVP quarterback and coordinates the league's most explosive offense. His skeptics say he grew up playing the wrong position to be an NFL head coach or even an offensive coordinator. Some critics have quietly grumbled that the coach's hard luck background, he had no relationship with his father, makes him a little too unpolished to be a head coach. It's really a damn shame and an indictment of the NFL hiring process how Greg Roman is being treated. Oh, you thought I was talking about Kansas City's figurehead offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy, the black Mike March who doesn't call plays, the guy who bombed as an offensive coordinator at his alma mater, the University of Colorado. No, I'm not talking about Bieniemy, the undersized running back turned Andy Reid intern. The media members championing Bieniemy are hypocrites. If Bieniemy were white, the same media people hailing him as the second coming of Tony Dungy would be melting down about the three arrests that forced Colorado to ban him from their campus in the early 1990s. I take too much pride in being intellectually honest to play the racial political game rewarded over social media and played throughout the mainstream media. We like to keep it real on this show. So let's talk about Greg Roman, the Baltimore Ravens offensive coordinator. Roman, an undersized Division III defensive tackle, is the architect and play caller of the Lamar Jackson plus one offense, the offense that stampeded the 2019 NFL season and has positioned the Ravens as the favorites to win the Super Bowl. This is the second time Roman has orchestrated a unique Super Bowl caliber offense. 7 years ago, Roman coordinated the Colin Kaepernick-led San Francisco offense that advanced to the Super Bowl. You'd think Roman would be the number one coaching candidate during the last hiring cycle. Only the Browns interviewed him, and it doesn't appear he's going to get that job. He's probably not the right fit for the Baker Mayfield reclamation project. The lukewarm interest in Roman says something about how the NFL views Baltimore's offense. The league isn't sold. The plus one is seen as a gimmick that only Lamar Jackson can execute. The Carolina Panthers gave a college coach a 7-year contract worth $60 million rather than even considering giving Roman a 5-year deal worth $25. The way Greg Roman is being treated tells you what owners, executives, and coaches really think about Lamar Jackson. In their minds, Lamar is a more talented, likable Colin Kaepernick. What I mean is the league still doesn't believe what Lamar is doing is sustainable. He's a flash in the pan. Lamar mania will subside the same as Cap, Cam, the Wildcat, and the run and shoot. The only way to change that perception is by winning the Super Bowl. Cap and Cam couldn't do it. They came oh so close. Close is not good enough. To start a trend, to make other franchises adopt Baltimore style, Roman and Lamar must win a Super Bowl. Until that happens, skepticism of player and coach will remain high. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst Lamar Arrington and Hall of Famer and GOAT candidate Eric Dickerson.
GOAT!
All right, Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Way Roman's being treated, is it proof that the league is skeptical of the Ravens' high-powered offense?
That was timely right there, because that's how I feel. I'm kind of like, I'm a lean yes, and I'm a say yes, but a little fence riding right here for me. Look, if you're Greg Roman in this situation, you're 47 years young, time is on your side in terms of your coaching aspirations and promotion to being a head coach. If I'm sitting there right now as Greg Roman is, I'm going to let this bake. I'm staying still when I'm talking about Lamar Jackson and his first year in my offense already have an MVP. And then going forward, I think that the league is sitting there skeptical, why I'm saying yes, of how long can you sustain this level of success and what is it going to materialize into? Super Bowl championship will make this a copycat offense around the league. Right now, it is just the flavor of the month, and everyone's trying to figure out what to do with that. But I remind everyone to go into your history books, and let's look up Bill Walsh in his first year. What was his record? In the new West Coast-style offense that took over the league. Good. What was his first year record? 2 wins. Yeah. What was his second year record? 6 wins. And then what that happened was Super Bowl start coming. My point is, you have to stay patient with this offense, even if the skeptics are right this year. What if they lose this year? Point being, be patient with this offense. And if I'm Greg Roman, I sit still and let my MVP bake.
Yeah, I think they're skeptical about being able to find the talent. I think you alluded to it and touched on it in your Whitlock, where you're looking at a guy like Lamar Jackson who can execute the style of offense that Greg Roman architects for that team. So when you look at the teams out here that have looked for new coaching staffs, Dallas, Dak does not have the skill sets of Lamar Jackson. Washington, Haskins doesn't have it. Carolina, Cam is old. But do you draft? Is there someone in the draft? Giants, Browns, Daniel Jones, Mayfield, and Cleveland. You don't have the type of player at that position to say, we're going to put our money and let our money ride on Greg Roman to be the head coach of our team. Now, if you're saying in the future and you're looking at possibilities, Justin Fields, amazing, can throw the ball, great IQ, can run like a Lamar Jackson. There are a few guys out there, Kelly Bryant in Missouri, Bryce Perkins at UVA, great talents at that quarterback's position. But am I going to hire you as a head coach this year with this guy that we drafted as our quarterback and see if we can ride it out with him, or are we going to go in a different direction? I think that's what makes you skeptical of it, is do you have the guys that have the skill set and the caliber to actually be able to run that offense?
Before you go, Eric, the only thing I would say the NFL owners are stupid then. Because at the very least, I would bring Greg Roman in and pick his brain and figure out what it is he's doing and why he's being able to go two different places and take two quarterbacks and boom. I'd want to talk to the guy.
You gotta leave. Why you got it? You took almost all my stuff. I'm like, I can't got nothing to say.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's all right. You did the right thing.
You the GOAT. You got more than that.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Give me some yards.
You look at what Greg Roman has done. He's taken Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson. It's hard to find those kind of guys. I mean, you know, in the National Football League, when I came in the league, and even after, and you too, the running quarterback was not popular. Mm-hmm. They didn't want that quarterback. Even Randall Cunningham, my friend Randall, he would say, they're trying to change me. They don't want me to run the football. But now it's popular. It's because, you know, when you're winning, everything changes. Mm-hmm. And Greg Roman, he knows how to win, but you are saying this, are we sure that we can run this kind of offense? Are we sure that we needed a Greg Roman? He's not the guy just yet, but will he become the guy? Yes, he is kind of young, 47 years old for a coach. I mean, they're going a lot of coaches younger now, but he's still in that era where he can most definitely get a job, and I think he'll be successful at it.
The smart play is just to sit still. Let's also respect the two-way street of this opportunity. We're not certain that he's not telling his agent, the recruiters, that I'm fine right here. So don't even put the fillers out, because I'm going to build equity with this MVP I have in my first year. The numbers are just going to continue to inflate for coaching and what they're going to make. And then if he has the resume that he's building right now, beyond Kaepernick, I can duplicate this success. I could go somewhere else and replicate the success. It makes a lot of sense. The coaching opportunities usually come from bad teams because the NFL rewards failure. The draft is about the failing teams getting the best players. Coaching opportunities, other than Dallas, I would say, are about failed opportunities for other guys. They'll pounce on that. If I'm Greg Roman, I sit still and I ride my MVP.
The reason I pointed directly to Carolina is because, to me, it just doesn't make sense for David Tepper not to bring Greg Roman in and consider him strongly. You have Cam Newton.
Yeah.
He would fit what they're doing. Maybe he's too old and you got to move on from him. But to me, the Carolina Panthers should have taken a long look at Greg Roman, possible solution for Cam Newton, and possible if you want to go into the draft and develop another quarterback. And then just because, and again, I wouldn't ask Greg Roman to move off his strength, this style of offense, but to me, the way he's had success in two different organizations, I wouldn't place some kind of limit on him that, oh, this is the only style of offense or the only style of quarterback he could work with. This dude, I think, has a unique background that helps him connect with football players in a way that maybe some other coaches can't.
Carolina did not have a good enough year where they won't have a good draft pick. If you're looking at what he could do with older Cam Newton, you say, okay, we can try this and see what we can do, but maybe a Jalen Hurts falls to you in the draft. Maybe you're able to get a hold of him, and maybe you're able to bring him in and architect that defense around the guy that has as high a football IQ as any pocket passing quarterback, but has the athletic ability to run the ball like a runner. It makes a ton of sense if that's the way you're looking at it. I would also add to that, when you're looking at Greg Roman, possibly people are looking at it. We always say there's the other side of it, the skeptics of it. Well, if you're looking at what was happening in his 49ers days, a lot of people would attribute the success in that run to the Super Bowl based off of their defense. Right? Yeah, exactly. So you can say undisputably, even though this is a phenomenal defense that they have in Baltimore, it is – you cannot debate the fact that Lamar Jackson is the reason why he's the catalyst of this team. You could do that in 49ers.
It's a legitimate point, but let's also remember there have been two quarterbacks, well, now three if you count Patrick Mahomes, but Greg Roman's been involved with two different quarterbacks that made people say, holy cow. Remember, Ron Jaworski was saying about Colin Kaepernick, and he had me right there with him, like, oh, my God, this is going to be the greatest thing ever.
Me too.
And here he is. Greg Roman again with Lamar Jackson. And we all said, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing we've ever seen.
Yeah.
That's a unique skill set for an offensive coordinator. It blows my mind that there's still some skepticism, but I think there is. And so that leads to the follow-up question. Would a loss Sunday undermine – Saturday. I think they play on Saturday. Would a loss Saturday undermine the credibility of Baltimore's offense?
It would. It would. I have to be realistic with that, even though I don't like – the critics, the naysayers, the people who are sitting there on that edge, ready to pounce on this situation.
They are ready.
Because as soon as they see any form of failure, without even looking at the complexion of that failure, what if they score 46 points and lose like the Saints did when they were playing the 49ers? They still going to pounce on this offense and say, oh, they didn't control the clock and keep the other team off the field.
Yeah, but Whitlock saying that, too.
My dog will be here. So my thing is, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's in life, and it's in this style of offense. We see it all the time. You start something, an invention. You create something. If you don't see that through, it fails. And then people on the outside will say, look, I told you that wasn't going to work. I told you that was a gimmick. That's why it failed. The real reason it failed is because you didn't keep the belief to be persistent enough to get it to its goal. Bill Walsh failed his first year. Bill Walsh failed his second year. Bill Walsh didn't fail any time after that. This offense is in its first year with this team and this player in Lamar Jackson. Ride it through no matter if you win or lose.
You want to go, GOAT? I don't want to take your point.
No.
You want to go?
You always seem to go. Go ahead. I'm after you.
Well, it does undermine it. And the football purists and traditionalists will sit there and they will pounce. And they will say that we told you so. We saw with RG3. We saw with Kaepernick. We've seen this before. Stick to tried and true. That's the first point. The second point is, and I think it kind of follows your point, Marcellus, is when you're looking at the total whole of the scope of this game, what will the defenses bring to this weekend's game? What will Tennessee's defense bring to the game? What will Baltimore's defense bring to the game? And I think that will play a lot into what comes out, what plays out in this game. So if Lamar Jackson and this offense is able to have a very, very successful day, but they lose this game, It'll still undermine it because they did not have enough to win the game. Mm-hmm. But I think that in the nature of which they win or lose will play a definite role or part as to how we identify if it was a failure or if it was gimmicky offense.
First of all, I don't think they'll lose the football game. I think they're that good. But I think if they do lose the game, I think people say, well, they ain't played in 3 weeks. You know, and why didn't you play the starters the last game? You know, them always. Mm-hmm. But then after that, they'll say, Lamar Jackson got hurt. Why'd you play him? You didn't have to play him. Mm-hmm. So that's the only part I worry about. You know, when you come back, you ain't played in 3 weeks. You know, I think it's going to take them to get, you know, it takes you a while to get in rhythm. But I really believe that this offense, no one has an answer for it yet. They haven't found an answer for it yet. You know, you kind of slow it down. You have moments you can stop it. But I think that you can't score with them. You know, run the football. You know, I always say run the football is not popular in today's football, but that's how you win football games. Mm-hmm. But Lamar Jackson does it so different because as fast as he runs, and when I watch him on film, he reads the defense just as fast. Mm-hmm. Just, everything he does is fast. Like, you don't run fast, and obviously you read defenses slow. So to me, I think that this is going to be the new wave of quarterbacks. You know, if they win the Super Bowl, and I think they'll win the Super Bowl if they get there, I think everybody would be looking for a Lamar Jackson.
I'm going to tell you what's already started the undermining process of this offense. Almost win or lose this weekend, and I certainly think it'll be undermined if they lost this weekend and the offense struggled in any way. But the biggest knock on this offense didn't even happen with the Baltimore Ravens. It's the hit Jadeveon Clowney put on Carson Wentz. Mm. That's the solution to this offense. That's an ugly solution, but that's what football does, and that's why I'm disappointed the league hasn't come down incredibly hard on Jadeveon Clowney. It was a dirty hit. I think it was a calculated dirty hit, and it's the kind of hit that somebody desperate playing Lamar Jackson will try to do to put it into this offense, and that's why they needed to come down really hard on Jadeveon Clowney. This kid is the biggest star going in football. They need to protect this style of quarterback, and that was a dirty hit. And that, to me, in a desperate football game, that's what desperate people do. Hmm. They cross the line. That's what I think has everybody afraid. If he gets hit the way Carson Wentz does, has concussion, the offense, poof.
Gone.
Well, everybody's been afraid of that for any quarterback. But the thing is that now, when a quarterback runs, if he slides, they're not going to hit him.
Right.
Now, Carson Wentz didn't slide.
Forward.
He was forward like a runner. Now, if that had been a running back.
That's how Lamar died.
Hold up.
How he dies.
But hold, if that had been a running back and it got hit like that, it'd been no big deal. No.
And that's that's the difference in
that's
your
the
argument.
Difference.
The difference is Lamar Jackson knows how to handle himself as a running back. If you're already a victim where I'm a quarterback, if I get hit, it's going to hurt me. No. Other players out there, I'm getting hit. I know I'm going to get hit. But you got
to
get to
him. There's no way to protect yourself from that dirty hit Jadeveon Clowney did. And I've seen Lamar Jackson dive forward in the exact same fashion.
Yep.
And I couldn't stand that play. And I'm afraid we could see something like it again this week. I hope I'm wrong. Eric Dickerson and LeVar Arrington
over here.
How could I run LeVar?
LeVar trying to convince Eric Dickerson he's faster than him.
Lord.
Our big story. Let's move to Kansas City, where the Chiefs will look to exercise some of their postseason demons this weekend. Hosting the Texans Sunday, Patrick Mahomes has come back to earth a bit this year, but the QB actually says he's better now than he was during last year's record-breaking MVP season because he's been able to cut down on the negative play. When you look at the numbers, there's a pretty big drop-off in touchdowns and passer rating from last year. But Mahomes has thrown just 5 interceptions to last year's 12. All right, anybody here agree with Patrick Mahomes that he's better this year than last year?
I agree. And it doesn't always come out in the measurables. But one of the things we need to add to that equation is how you feel, your level of command. How bright is that green light to you now and how slow the game is to you in these moments? It leads itself to him cutting down on his mistakes. We talked about less turnovers. And sometimes when you have success in big numbers, a lot of that is just positive unintended consequences. Like, ooh, I shouldn't have threw that ball. Ooh, I shouldn't have threw the ball. Oh, I got bailed out. Thank you for that. And you go back to the lab and start to self-correct. And part of that self-correction, I think, right now is not taking the same amount of risks, not always swinging for the fences, realizing that he could control the tempo in the game and be more efficient even if he doesn't have the greater absolute numbers. So, yeah, I totally agree with him.
I agree. And I agree just based upon, again, some just to add on, the familiarity of what is being asked of you, the amount of games, the type of preparation coming into the season, how does it feel getting into the playoffs? He's now understanding in real time what he has to base his expectations and his preparation off of. And he made it very clear, I have a better team. I have better weapons, he feels. He has a better defense. The defense is giving up less points. He doesn't feel as though he has to take as many risks as he did last season. And maybe some of those yards came from those risks that he was taking because he felt he needed to take them.
Mm-hmm. I agree with both of y'all, but I agree for different reasons. I think that him getting hurt, you know, it hurt him, but not just him getting hurt, Tariq Hill getting hurt, losing Kareem Hunt, not having those guys, and still playing at a very high level. So to me, that shows that he's better right there, because you don't have all your weapons, but you're still playing good, and he got hurt. That shows that to me, without all the touchdowns, and like down on the interceptions, most definitely, I agree.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you all, but I'm going to do it in a different way, because I translate what he's saying is, yeah, my stats aren't as good regular season as they were last year. He's not better than he was last year during the 16-game regular season. But what he does believe and what I do believe, and I think it's what you guys are saying, is he's more prepared for this postseason than he was last year. He's more prepared for greatness in this postseason. He feels supremely confident going into this postseason, where last year coming into the postseason, it was all unknown territory. It was all unfamiliar. Now, this is like, it's like riding a bike, you know, from last year. I've already mastered this. I know exactly what I'm going to do in the postseason, how I'm going to handle certain situations. And the confidence he feels from this defense over the last 5 or 6 weeks is just really emboldening him and making him feel like, oh, I got this. He feels supremely confident.
Yeah, and you get that clarity. I mean, that's when we say the game slows down and everyone stops going around you and at the speed limit, and you start to see things in slow motion, and you start to realize that your output, you can start to have a direct relationship with the outcome. And look, we never have that full relationship where no matter what I do, we're going to win. But you start to close that gap and realize where to take your shots, when not to take your shots, when to stay in the flow. I remember my second year, I had a spin move that I thought was going to work on any and everybody. But in my second year, I realized, don't show them your spin move. Like, setup was a part of my game. So the numbers don't always suggest that you got better, but mentally, you start to calculate and start to put it out there in a better formula. And that's where I think he's talking about. The numbers may not suggest that, but my feelings do.
It's so true what you're saying, because here's a guy, when you think about it, he's probably watching film 100 times differently with so much more clarity this season than what he did last year.
Yeah.
And you're talking about setups, right? His no-look passes, the things. When you let the ball go quick, when you let it go later, those priorities, we'll say, right? When you're able to prioritize, this is when I'm going to let the ball go. This is when I'm going to run. This is when I'm going to slide. This is when I'm going to try to buy a little bit of time. This is going to create space for my running backs. This is going to create space for our screen plays. Mm-hmm. This is going to create space for our deep balls. When you have all of that and you can actually prioritize it and categorize it and keep it organized, you are going to be a better player. Even if it doesn't show in the statistical categories, he's going to be a better player.
You get to build off of your own reps, like stand on your own shoulders, because you get to do it.
Absolutely.
I remember when the option first hit, people would do the option like this, sad hut, and then ride it, and then that, if they get it, that was it. If you notice now in the option, you go sad hut, you ride, and you ride. Still fake it. That's just the little things, man. And I think that's what Patrick Mahomes talk about. These little things, they don't show up on the stat sheet, but trust me, I'm doing them.
Well, as a second-year starter, you know, I think about, you said your second year. I think about my first year. I had 1,800 yards rushing. Mm. And I mean, that was a great year. Mm. But
why are you staring at me telling me you had 1,800 yards?
I had 1,900. You the linebackers. So I got to look at you.
1,900 if he was playing, but go ahead.
So at my first year, that was a great year. But my second year, I even saw things better. And I sure that's for him, too. I had 2,100 yards the next year.
Oh,
I had 2,100 yards the next year.
21.
But can I go back to Kareem Hunt? Mm. Him not having a real running game, because the quarterback's his best friend is the running game. Him not having a running game and playing the way he played this year shows that I feel more comfortable.
You know, he sounds like an old head, and I'm about to make one of these stupid analogies that I make that probably crosses the line. But he sounds like an old head. We used to have in Kansas City the dude owned a barbershop named Ted. He was in his 50s, and this is when I was in Kansas
Old
City.
Head Ted?
And he would be sitting around listening to everybody, you know, dudes in the barbershop. Man, I tore it up. I went 45 minutes. I went an hour. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, I just tore it up. And Ted would then say, he goes, man, y'all don't know what the hell y'all doing, man. You don't know what you doing until you 50. He used to swear up, but then he goes, you don't know what you doing until you 50. I'm 52 now. I understand exactly what he's talking about. And it's like, you out, and so.
I don't want that man.
So Patrick Mahomes is out here just going crazy, young guy last year, putting up blah, 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 blah. And he's like, you know what? I ain't got to do all that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't got to put in an hour. I can get this done in 30 minutes, 15, maybe.
Same thing.
You're so wrong for that analogy. You are so wrong on so many levels on your analogy.
Seriously,
that you just gave. I just want to make sure that I let you know I do not condone that message.
Can I get some
15 minutes? You're the 15 minutes.
I take pride.
Hey, you were speaking for yourself right there.
Yeah,
you
weren't
speaking for me.
I'm with you, Jason. What? I'm with you. Let's get it done. Let's get it over with. It's the same thing.
I need overtime.
Eric Dickerson's back. We're joined now by former Patriots offensive lineman, Rich Ohrenberger. All right, let's move to Green Bay, where Aaron Rodgers and the Packers host Russell Wilson and the Seahawks in a huge divisional matchup Sunday on Fox. Rodgers is a two-time MVP and has long been considered arguably the NFL's best quarterback, but our buddy Colin Cowherd made the case on The Herd yesterday that Wilson is actually having a better career than Rodgers.
The perception is Aaron's way up here and Russell's way down there. And then there's the current golden arm, Aaron Rodgers, who's had one great playoff run. And he's stupendous. But that arm makes us overlook some leadership issues, some arrogance issues, players calling him out issues, holds onto the ball too long issues. Since Russell came into the league, wins in the playoffs more, the passer rating even, passing touchdowns even, completion percentage, mostly dead even.
Any truth here? Is Russell Wilson actually better than Aaron Rodgers?
Huh? What? Little John come out of me. No. I will say, compelling argument, because it made me second guess what I already knew, that Aaron Rodgers was better than Russell Wilson. But good argument. One, I think you can't buy into Russell Wilson being better than Aaron Rodgers because Colin chose a false start line. We can't forget about Aaron Rodgers, the MVP, and Aaron Rodgers having statistically the greatest season ever when we're talking about this discussion. But that was omitted in this discussion. And I'm going to show you a full screen that illustrates this, because everyone's talking about Lamar Jackson having the best year ever, and I agree. But look at these numbers. Oh, Aaron Rodgers has better win percentage, completion percentage, combined touchdowns, combined yardage, and passer rating. You know why Russell Wilson is not up here? Because he doesn't qualify for this. So this is just one of the two MVP seasons by Aaron Rodgers, who's also a Super Bowl champion. So for this respect, if we're talking about Lamar Jackson being better in one season, and we don't have any seasons from Russell Wilson that compares to this. And then you go totality, you have to go all of Aaron Rodgers, which includes some incredible years like that.
Indisputably, Tom Brady's the best quarterback we've ever seen play the position, and he can't really hold a torch to the talents of Aaron Rodgers, or really any given season Aaron Rodgers has played. So I understand the case being made for Russell Wilson. I would say if you asked me 3 years ago who's having the better career, who's had the better career, I would have answered Aaron Rodgers. Well, we have a shorter sample size with Russell Wilson.
Right.
We have this long body of work, 12th season now for Aaron Rodgers. And today's NFL is so much more skewed towards the way Wilson plays the game than Rodgers. Rodgers is starting to settle into that, I'm going to hand off a bunch, I'm going to threaten you with my arm strength, because it's still elite-level arm strength. And I've done this for so long, I know what defenses are trying to do to me. Russell Wilson still possesses that improvisational ability that scares defenses, that keeps defensive coordinators awake at night. So I think as these paths diverge, as Rodgers, you know, who has less tomorrows than he does yesterdays, finishes his career, and we see Russell Wilson continue his career, this is going to become much clearer. Russell Wilson's the better quarterback.
What?
Ooh, that was a hell of a conclusion.
What? That ended the chain.
He caught me. He caught me in my pants.
Yeah, yeah. What movie ended with that?
Little M. Night Shyamalan twist for you,
EB. I heard that. Well,
there you go.
Is Russell Wilson better than Aaron Rodgers? Hell no. No. I mean, I don't even, just look at the highlights. Just go look at some of his highlights. I mean, let me start with Russell Wilson. Two weeks ago, Seattle could have won the division. Mm. They're on the one-yard line. Now, are they allergic to the one-yard line or something? I just don't know. How in the world does your quarterback get a delay a game? Aaron Rodgers, that would have never happened. Mm. Never. Man, Aaron Rodgers is such a great quarterback. If I was starting a football team, I look at him as a guy that I would most definitely have. Russell Wilson had, no. At age 23. When you look at some of the talent that Russell Wilson has had around him, and Aaron Rodgers has not had, like he has not had a running game. Finally, this year, he has a running game. Like John Elway didn't have a running game. He finally got Super Bowls when he got a running game. So for my money, for sure. I mean, I was always a big Aaron Rodgers fan.
I think Cowherd was making your argument that as things play out, this is going to be a lot closer than people think, and he thinks like you do that Russell Wilson's going to win this race. I'm not willing to go there. I'm just, for the reasons Eric just said, if Aaron Rodgers had the Legion of Boom, he'd have three Super Bowls. If Aaron Rodgers had Pete Carroll, I think he'd have a couple more Super Bowls. And listen, do I think Aaron Rodgers has potentially underachieved based off his talent at this point? Yes. Has Russell Wilson overachieved based on his talent? I'd say yes. I just have to see Russell Wilson's going to have a hell of a finish to his career to catch Aaron Rodgers.
Well, I'm a green banana guy, though. You know, I kind of try to project out 3 years, then look back 3 years. And I see Russell Wilson as the green bananas on the shelf. If you're investing in Aaron Rodgers' stock right now, you're buying a depreciating value. You're buying Russell Wilson. It's still on an upswing. This guy is playing unbelievable football and has been this season. And that's not to demean what Rodgers has done. We're really comparing two greats here. And in this vacuum, in this single season, two great seasons by two great quarterbacks. So it's a fair comparison. I give the edge to Russell Wilson because, again, we're talking careers and the breadth of the career.
At some point, Rich, though, won't Russell Wilson have to be the best quarterback in the league in order to surpass Aaron Rodgers? You got to win an MVP at some point.
But MVPs, to a certain extent, are popularity contests. LeBron James in a different league.
No, that's NBA.
Okay. Well, let's keep NFL. It on the NFL. I mean, sometimes it is the flavor of the month. There was a point where this was a three-dog race where you had Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson
and
in the same
sentence. And then Russell Wilson played himself out of that conversation by having a second half of the season that is not MVP worthy. So, look, this team, in terms of success, is better this year than last year when they had the number one rushing offense and Russell Wilson, departure from Legion of Boom. So, yeah, you could be excited about the results. But I'm not excited about a guy in this particular conversation going against Aaron Rodgers, who is in a new system. Everyone says Aaron Rodgers' attitude is bad for his teammates, bad for the culture. Aaron Rodgers got rid of a coach and change things to a better outcome. So we may question him, but let's not question his results at this point. This is a 13-win team that's going forward and had a bye week. So
he put his team in the first year of a system, Aaron Rodgers did, in a better position than we've seen Russell Wilson do when he's been independent of number one running game and Legion of Boom.
I mean, the only argument I'll provide, because we're comparing things that, you know, like there's a new head coach in Green Bay, but you have a terrible offensive line in Seattle. I mean, you can always have your things that set you back behind the eight ball, but as a great, as an elite player, you overcome. And we've seen that in Seattle this season, overcoming an offensive line where you really, if you get behind in the score, you don't have a chance. So what does Russell Wilson do? He improvises. He makes sure that he doesn't get sacked or pressured as much or creates with his legs and gets that ball where it needs to be on time in spite of some of those factors that could really hamstring the success of this team.
But when you see, think about Aaron Rodgers when he got hurt. Was it last year he got hurt? And how the team, this Ooh. To me, that team just, without him, God. That team is like nada. I mean, you take Russell Wilson away from that. Don't get me wrong, I think Seattle would suffer, but it wouldn't be such a big drop-off because everybody knows Aaron Rodgers. Who's the second best player? Aaron Rodgers. Who's the third best player? Aaron Rodgers.
Well, you know what? That's actually a point for Russell Wilson because you can't even imagine that because he's never missed a game.
Like, no, that's true. Durability.
So that's durability. Durability.
Yeah. Factor that durability. Because that's in the equation. That's that what we compare greats. We say, well, he stood the test of time.
All right, Darnell, what's the lowdown on the Super 6 this weekend?
Yes, sir. We got Seahawks and Packers. And before the game kicks off on Fox this Sunday, be sure to download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for free for your chance to win Terry Bradshaw's $25,000. All right, guys, one of the questions is, who will win by how many points? So I want to ask all you guys, give us a winner and a final score.
Best game of the weekend, Packers 28-27.
Ooh, call me a hypocrite right now. Seahawks 23, Packers 18.
Hypocrite.
All that talk.
Hypocrite.
All that talk. I think Seahawks win.
I got the Packers winning at home, a close one, too, 27-24.
I got Packers winning 30-17. Cold weather, a big factor.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington and Rich Ornberger are back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to Cleveland.
Let's go.
Where Cleveland Cavaliers head coach John Beilein stirred up some controversy this week. The coach apologized to his team after calling them, quote, a bunch of thugs during a film session. Beilein addressed the incident and explained what happened yesterday. Check this out.
Yesterday in a film session, I used a word that when I meant to say slug, the word thug came out. It was brought to my attention a couple hours later. Called all the players afterwards, explained the situation. We met about it today. We apologized. I apologized about it today as well. Was not, never intended, and I think the players understand that now. But it's something I have to learn from and enunciate better and be just more clearer with what my intentions were. So they all know it, they understand it, but it's something that's unfortunate that we'll get behind us without question.
All right, guys, I just want to know straight up, what are your thoughts on the situation?
I don't understand why someone, if they had a problem, didn't confront him in the moment. I just don't get that. And so I think we're making a molehill into a mountain.
I'm looking at this and just laughing. Like, this is funny. Like, that PC pressure is so real out there, man. Damn!
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. In my day, this would have never been an issue. But I've been called a lot worse. And I will tell you this. For anyone who's sitting there and wants to play the race angle or he's talking to black players, let me just tell you this. Please don't take ownership of the word thug. It is not intended for black people. Just like ghetto is not intended for a group of black people, but somehow, some way, my people like to take ownership of these words.
Negative words,
The conditions of a ghetto are negative, but white people have ghettos as well. So let's not go there, people. Why did you apologize, coach?
Amen.
Right. Now, there's two reasons to apologize, my therapist says.
Guilt.
One is because of guilt of wrongdoing, or also guilt of hurting your feelings. So maybe unintentionally, he hurt feelings. Therefore, he wants to apologize for that. I'll respect that, but for me and my money, being in that room, when you say thug and the face of our franchise is a white guy by the name of Kevin Love, I don't know why you even think you offended anyone in this room.
Well, clearly there was a reaction, and part of being a communicator is effectively communicating your message. And if something you said, a word, a buzzy word that you use, distracted from the message, then you need to do some backpedaling. You need to do some over-explaining for either what you meant to convey or apologize for using language that is going to interrupt your ability to effectively communicate to your group moving forward.
Like that.
And so I think that he actually made a good decision here. Now, do I agree with you? Yeah. In every single aspect, I completely agree with you. But this is a new generation of player. I hear it all the time from guys who are in locker rooms who are 10 and 12-year pros in the NFL, and you hear it on the NBA side too. Ooh. It is a very, very different modus operandum. You have to adjust to a very sensitive group of new player entering the locker room. And as we know, these are young man's sports. And as you age, you need to connect with a younger and younger demographic. So if you found yourself in one of these potholes and got tripped up, you have to walk it back a little bit because you're paid to connect with these players. And if you lose that trust, if that trust is breached, you can't get it back.
What a high road I should have took. That is a high road right there.
I call it the Sissification of America.
What?
Bunch of big sissies is what they are. Like, you grown men.
Call me a thug. I'm a thug. I can't. I hate you. Because you called me a thug.
Come on now, man. Listen here.
Man, leave him alone. Call him out.
If you're going to be that soft and being led in your profession by the leader, then you are diminishing what a leader represents. I've never heard a leader, even if they don't use profanity, I've never been across one leader that didn't have moments where they raised their voice and said some strong words and had strong language towards what it is that they're urging you to do. If y'all look like slugs, then you look like slugs. If you look like ish, then you look like ish. You earned it. That man has been put in that position to tell you what it. I remember when Joe. I can remember when they knocked me down and they was kicking my ears in, and they were kicking.
My paternal.
Oh man, Joe Paterno. And we got up and I whooped them back. Like what? I don't even know what you're talking about. But I'm ready to go handle some business because what you're telling me is that you're willing to fight for this. You're willing to go to war for this. War is connected to competition. Our way of saying we are strong, we are tough, I can do this is by competing. Basketball, football, track, whatever it is, we show our who we are by our intestinal fortitude by competing.
But Joe Paterno is a great example, though, because if you want to talk about the appropriate nomenclature that our society has been able to talk about and to people with over his tenure as a head coach, I mean, you're talking about a span of 6 decades. He had to change how he spoke to his players.
He had to evolve.
There is no question about it.
Correct.
So I think we're on another precipice of change, and we're seeing it take place.
The only thing we're missing, though, I want to add into this is John Beilein has come in with old school values and an old school approach to coaching and practice and the way he's pushing
God
these
forbid.
Players. And this is their passive aggressive way of pushing back. A lot of these guys aren't happy with John Beilein being their coach. Why we got this old dude in here making us do things we don't want to do, blah, blah, blah. This is their little pushback, passive aggressively, using social media to hang this guy out to dry. I wouldn't have apologized.
11 wins will make you do
I would have confronted
it.
Dude.
Own it. Own
it's
it.
Like, look.
Own it.
LeVar likes the N-word.
I love the N-word.
And do I not?
Immediately.
Do I not come at you and, hey, man.
Nah, son.
Don't use that.
You immediately tell me don't use it.
Yeah. Not with me.
But
again,
I love using it.
I don't understand why these players couldn't get this. Sure. Hey, I don't like it. Let's move to New England, where Tom Brady's future remains up in the air. But speculation has already started about who might take his place should he leave the Patriots. Peter King says that if Brady isn't back in Foxborough next year, he thinks Bill Belichick might have his eye on Andy Dalton as a guy who could be a stable force at quarterback and help bring backup Jarrett Stidham along. All right, the question here is, if Belichick won a Super Bowl with Andy Dalton,
Lord,
would it change your opinion of Tom Brady?
Yeah, it would. And it's so wrong, but I'm going to say it like this because of the DNA of Bill Belichick, who was a part of a tandem with Bill Parcells, and that became ultra competitive to the point where Belichick, one of the missions were to prove that he can win without Bill Parcells and vice versa. Belichick did, Parcells didn't. That changed how I view Parcells a little bit, I have to admit. Bingo.
Boom.
And then, so now, Belichick has this DNA. Oh, I created a GOAT out of a six-rounder. Huh. Y'all think I can't do more or do that again with more of an athletic talent base? And let's just be respectful. Andy Dalton is more talented at quarterback than Tom Brady. Is he better? Is he greater? No, no. But is he more talented? Is that a better base to start from? Absolutely, yes. So, Belichick, once again, incentivized for the challenge of showing that I could be the GOAT without the GOAT. He may want to go out there and get an Andy Dalton, groom the youngster in Stidham, and try and win a Super Bowl. If he did that, we're looking at Brady a little side-eye.
But I don't think this diminishes my, or will diminish my opinion of Tom Brady as much as build up and cement my opinion of Bill Belichick.
Hold on, Rich, you're very smart.
I just want to be clear here. Go ahead. Let me see.
Diminish isn't on here. Would it change your opinion of Tom Brady? I didn't say diminish. Would it change your opinion?
Let me change the question.
You're right.
It would change my opinion of Belichick, and it would reinforce some of what we've already seen. I watch Matt Castle, who inarguably is not as good of a quarterback as Tom Brady,
no.
lead a team to 11 wins. He started 15 games. He started most of a 16th. It was the first game of the season. Brady was out. I watched through the Deflategate suspension, two separate quarterbacks get win in Tom Brady's stead. Bill Belichick can turn based on how he approaches the game defensively, the offensive staff he surrounds his quarterbacks with, the iron pyrite into gold. And that's what he's done several times already when Brady hasn't been available. So this wouldn't change my opinion of Tom Brady. He's played in a tremendous system, and he was a supreme talent. But it definitely would cement and continue and further my appreciation for what Belichick has done as a head coach.
We're at the point where two storylines have to play out. What does Tom Brady do next? What does Bill Belichick do next? If Bill Belichick wins a Super Bowl with a different quarterback, I don't care who it is. Andy Dalton, I don't care who it is. You're going to change your opinion towards Tom Brady.
Yeah.
However, if Tom Brady goes somewhere else and for some unforeseen reason or way, he gets to the Super Bowl, he don't even have to win a Super Bowl. If he can get to the Super Bowl with a different team, it may change my opinion of Bill Belichick.
No.
It may. Now, that's just my opinion. One man's opinion.
Okay, but it won't.
Okay. So as it stands right now, their accomplishments are intertwined. They're married. Can't do anything about that. So what I'm basing my feelings of Tom Brady on right now, does it change the way I would feel about him? I don't think it changes. Does it change my opinion of him? It does not change my opinion of him. But
Let me ask you this then. Let me use Marcellus' standard, which I think is an excellent one.
Okay.
We used to think one thing about Bill Parcells. Did your opinion not change when he did not win another Super Bowl without Bill Belichick?
Again, it did not change my viewpoint of how good of a coach Bill Parcells has been during his tenure of coaching. He was effective in Dallas. I enjoyed playing against him.
Effective and great. Yeah. At one point, he was on track to be the Bill Belichick of his era.
The fact that Bill Belichick redefined coaching and redefined how we view success is once in a lifetime.
I'm going to tell you what Belichick did even more. I'm going to just tell you the significance of the Bill Belichick and what he did to Parcells. When you think Lawrence Taylor, you think Bill Belichick, not Bill Parcells.
Boom. And look at this.
I don't. I don't think Bill Belichick.
I need you to be 100 up here, and you usually are, but right now I got to push back.
Come on.
One, Bill Parcells was worse than Jason Garrett in Dallas. Now,
effective.
Effective is whatever you want to say. Well, Jason Garrett was more effective.
I did play for the Redskins now. My level of standards went down.
And this is the thing about it. Let's not act like Matt Castle isn't a curse word in the Brady home, because it's used to puncture a little hole in his resume and in his body of work. When you say Matt Castle in respect to Tom Brady, it's not used to actually prop him up. It's used to say, without you, that coach can get this guy to do exactly what you do in the regular season. Now, we all know Tom Brady's had postseason success, that a Matt Castle was never afforded the opportunity. But the point is, they use Matt Castle as a weapon against Tom Brady. If he went and won with Andy Dalton,
that is not a red rifle. Let me just say this very quickly. I'm going to give it to you,
sure,
Rich.
Yeah, yeah.
Very quickly. Mm. You would have to win and be in the Super Bowl as many times.
No.
Yes! Yes, to justify,
can't these things be mutually exclusive?
I hope. Like,
can't I look at Donovan McNabb and say he's great, and look at Andy Reid and say he's great, and know full well that Andy Reid went on to Alex Smith and he took one man's trash and made it his treasure in Kansas City, and he moved on from Smith to Mahomes
No, absolutely not.
And that's my point.
Alex Smith?
This is an argument for now. In 5 years after their careers end, we're going to think of Tom Brady as great and Belichick as great.
Of course.
And we're never going to make this comparison like, well, who made who?
I agree.
Oh, yeah,
but look. You may have the debate. Well, but
there's
you
an agreement on great. What the conversation gets changed is GOAT. If Andy Dalton came in there and won a Super Bowl, it would reopen the GOAT discussion.
It does not, because it's long gone.
No, this isn't Steve Young.
GOAT status is connected to longevity.
This is the red rifle.
Don't act like
yes, longevity is connected to greatness.
Please respect how fluid these things are. I live in L.A. when Shaq and Kobe were together, and they departed. Shaq left a little better than Kobe. We were like, but Kobe's coming. Shaq won that next ring. We were like, Kobe, I don't know what's going on with you, until Kobe had to close the gap. So the point is, no matter what you do in body of work, it's not cemented.
That's two players.
I'm using that as an example. It's not cemented when we have a coach and a player. Your status is fluid based on future success.
Phil Jackson, Michael Jordan, do we think less of Jordan because he went and had success with a different franchise?
No.
I want to go.
Before we go, I'd like to offer sidelined NBA superstar Kevin Durant a few words of advice. Log off social media. It's a poor fit for your personality. Your energy is mostly positive, joyful, humble, and appreciative. Social media blunts your natural energy. It distorts the image of the young man we saw celebrate his teammates and his mama when the NBA named him the most valuable player in the league. Kevin Durant is supposed to be the NBA's version of Lamar Jackson, the freakish talent and mama's boy even opponents and opposing fan bases love. Durant's addiction to and lack of restraint on Twitter and Instagram have turned him into an acquired taste, a polarizing persona. Yesterday, Durant and former teammate Kendrick Perkins sparred over Twitter about Durant's legacy in Oklahoma City. Perkins tweeted out that Russell Westbrook is the greatest Thunder of all time. And that began an exchange that led to Durant calling out Perkins for a poor playoff series and Perkins blasting Durant for leaving OKC for Golden State. Later in the day, Durant bickered with CBS radio host Brandon Tierney about choosing the Brooklyn Nets over the New York Knicks. Durant eventually explained his Twitter activity by saying this energy doesn't leave social media. What he means is that negative Twitter exchanges have no impact on his real-life emotions. People love to say that they've compartmentalized social media. The negativity energy on social media is secondhand smoke. It damages us all. What's worse, for a highly public figure like Durant, it changes the way we perceive him. Durant should be one of the two or three most likable athletes in all of professional sports. His natural energy is positive. He plays the game in such a beautiful, smooth, fluid fashion. He's a tall, more efficient Steph Curry with a tiny touch of Dr. J. Durant should be revered. He's tossing all that away so he can feud with Kendrick Perkins about things that are irrelevant. You can't be Mr. Thunder when you leave the team and city to join their rival. Perkins is right, but he's right about something that doesn't matter. Durant can write his legacy with his play, performance, and accomplishments in Brooklyn. On the court, Durant can be Mr. NBA. He can answer all his critics when he plays next season. As long as he doesn't overshadow his performance, by delving deeper into the social media abyss. The basketball court is KD's platform. Social media is his diving board. I hope Twitter and IG don't drown him. Let's move to Santa Clara. According to Fox Bet, the 49ers are 7-point favorites over the Vikings this week. The game will be a showdown between two quarterbacks with a lot on the line. With Jimmy G-string making his first playoff start and Kirk Cousins trying to prove his first playoff win wasn't a fluke. All right, who would you rather have Saturday, Kirk Cousins or Jimmy G-string?
No. Not in my household. His name is Jimmy GQ. And oh, I even got it. That's a good-looking dude. I give Jimmy G that, man. Jimmy G is a baller.
He know he look good.
He know he look good. Yeah.
Got a
and
jaw.
All that money, and he look like that.
And a dimple in the chin.
Yeah,
the dimple.
Yeah, you throwing
respect,
that out there,
brother. Huh? Right. I had to go there.
Pause.
Look, there are issues in terms of Kirk Cousins. What's his emotional state after the monkey's off his back? How he would respond? Obviously, Thielen having the stitches this week. And then you're talking about other injuries around their team. I'm looking at where I've seen a consistency. I've seen a second half of a season from Jimmy G that is telling me that he has hit his stride. And you talk about Jimmy G early in the season, 7 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, first 6 games. Last 10, 20 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. So he's not so loose with the football anymore, as Whitlock loves to say. I say it's Jimmy GQ.
I'm with you. I think I'd rather have Jimmy G for all those reasons. And then add on to it, the storyline with Kirk Cousins is he can't get it done in primetime, big moments, the playoff game described as a fluke by some. And you know what happens when you become a victim of circumstances? You start to inherit the victim role. And I think Jimmy Garoppolo knew to this. Again, me being a green bananas guy, I look at Jimmy G and I see his future ahead of him. He hasn't been pegged as anything yet, right? You know, early this season, you could have said, well, he's more of a game manager. But like you said, he convinced a lot of people otherwise. He started protecting the football more. He started winning games on his own merit. So the story is yet to be written on Jimmy Garoppolo. And that's where I side with him in this game, because Kirk Cousins, when things start going bad, You know what the favorable media is going to say about Kirk. They're going to say, well, Thielen was hurt. Well, Diggs wasn't 100%.
Yeah.
And it was just the story we've always known about Kirk Cousins. He shrunk a little bit in that light. I think Jimmy G is going to shine when the cameras turn on.
Well, I think you're a little incorrect on him getting pegged, because Whitlock's been pegging thou loose all season long.
Loose with the football.
Loose him. Loose. He said he doesn't thou protect loose. The ball. I really wanted to go with Kirk Cousins because of some factors on the other side of the ball. But then I started comparing those factors, like, can Cook run against this Niners defense effectively? I don't think so. Can that open up the play action for their defense or for their offense against that Niners defense? I don't think so. So I'm looking at it from the opposite side of the ball. This Niners defense is so impressive with how they're able to smother quarterbacks
and
alter them.
Yeah.
That if I got to take a quarterback in this game that has the best opportunity to have success, as well as this Vikings defense is playing, I think that this Niners defense, I know that this Niners defense has the ability to take an already Kirk Cousins that's trying to get that monkey further off his back. I'm taking Garoppolo.
And let's talk about his playoff success. And I'm talking about the teams that are in the playoffs, 5 of them. Seattle, Green Bay, Baltimore, New Orleans, Seattle. 114 quarterback rating against those 5 teams. 8 touchdowns. 2 interceptions for Jimmy G. So he's ready for the teams he's going to see going forward.
And because we're all in agreement. Even I am going to say Jimmy G, because I just think there's too much pressure on Kirk Cousins. Mm. We last week, one of the things we didn't get a chance to talk about on Monday early in the week, they were winning the game and Stephon Diggs was acting a fool. And that to me just increases the pressure on Kirk Cousins. His margin for error just isn't that great, because the people are, last week was a fluke. You got Stephon Diggs being a diva wide receiver. I think Jimmy G, particularly this Saturday, is poised for a big game. What he does in the NFC Championship, I'm not sure. This game, I think he's going to play with a lot of confidence and play at a really high level. And I think it's going to be harder for Kirk Cousins, not because I'm ready to move off the Kirk Cousins as a choke artist. I just think situationally, facing that 49ers defense, coming off a bye, Kirk Cousins just facing some really tough obstacles.
And I also think, poise, you said it. Look, when I saw some of the camera angles they showed on Kirk Cousins in the pocket when that Saints pressure was getting
he
to
was
him.
He was feeling it.
I mean, his eyes are darting around. He's running for his life at times. I feel like when you divert from the plan, he panics some. And you may have to divert from the plan in this 49ers matchup, and you may not have Cook, like the reliance on this run game hitting the way it did because of what you just said. That defensive line, it's deep. And that's trouble. That's a struggle to run against.
Linebackers is bad, too.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Lamar Jackson.
You! Now you!
Bro. First, who's your big dummy of the day?
Oh!
To yourself.
Hey, man, the big dummy of the day goes to the person that said, it took me 50 years to finally get sex right. Took you 50 years to figure out you need to just do it by yourself and keep other people out of it, huh?
Oh, man, stay focused. Stay focused.
Oh, man, let's talk Lamar Jackson. Who faces off against the Titans Saturday. Lamar set a new quarterback rushing record this year with more than 1,200 yards. But Tennessee has the NFL's rushing champ in Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Marcellus, any chance Lamar outrushes Derrick Henry this week?
It's a slight chance. He had 5 games over 100. Derrick Henry has 6, including one over 200, making that 7. Lord, I say slight chance, but no, Derrick Henry's going to be the workhorse. He's going to be the one that carries them. Got to be.
All right, I don't think.
No, you don't.
Derrick Henry's going to outrush Lamar.
Yeah, you better.
Lamar's going to have about 80, 90 yards. All right, Uncle Jimmy, I don't know what I did to provoke a Colin Kaepernick T-shirt.
Oh, you know what you did.
We were here.
But anyway, we talked about Greg Roman and
the success
he had with that Baltimore offense with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah,
what's your take?
All right, now, work with me a little bit here, Douglas. We talked about Greg Roman, and what did he do? What did
he do?
He went and pulled that Rocky Marciano crap.
That's they won.
Soon as I start talking about Eric Bieniemy, what'd he do? He went and pulled that Greg Roman out of his ass, didn't he?
That they won.
Eric Bieniemy. Huh?
He's sitting up here hyping up Greg Roman like he the second coming of Viagra. Look here, man. That man ain't doing nothing but living off the exploitations of Colin Kaepernick and Lamar Jackson.
Greg Roman.
Look at that. Let me tell you something. If they had if Colin and Lamar had the opportunity to work with a black offensive coordinator like Eric Bieniemy, woo! Lord Jesus, the numbers they put up have been astroneurological. But see, you know what, man? It don't surprise me that you would sit up here and give the man credit for the works of these young bucks.
Roman.
I mean, boys.
Roman.
Look here, man.
It was Greg Roman, not the man.
Not the Greg. Man. Roman.
Yeah.
Look here, man. Let me tell you something. Right now, I don't care what you call it. Right now, I got the problem with the fact that you coming down on Eric Bieniemy harder than you coming on a naked toilet seat in Vegas.
That's nasty.
Huh?
You nasty.
What?
I do that.
I have no idea what you just said.
Look, man, you had the audacity to bring up the man's arrest record.
Well,
Douglas, we don't do that, do we? We don't talk about our own personal transgressions in public. Man, you know how you people do, man.
Public record, though.
Hey, man, so what? The man had a few run-ins with the law. What brother wouldn't? It's Colorado. Man, it ain't but 7 brothers left in Denver since Shannon Sharp left. See, that's your problem with how you see things.
What's the problem?
Your opinion of people is a lot like your opinions of chicken.
Oh, boy. Oh,
here we go. Here we go. Do
Let's
it.
Just say you got a tendency to prefer the white meat.
Dude, I've been a thigh man my whole
you
life.
You like Greg Roman more than you like Colin Kaepernick.
That's true.
You like Jeff George more than you like Colin Kaepernick.
That's true.
Now, look, I know y'all ain't gonna believe. Hey, man, I watched Django Unchained with you side by side. You walked out that theater talking about, boy, Jim, Leonardo DiCaprio, he really carried that movie. Man, the movie called Django, not Candyland.
I did not say that.
Look here, man, I'm just telling you something. Yeah. I ain't got no problem with your preference
of the white meat. But let's just be honest, what we all know.
What?
Hey, it's more flavor in the dark meat.
All right, I gotta go.
Oh no. Breast and wing dude too, man.
Hey, man, try your. Hey,
let me get a breast and wing.
All right, I got Lamar at a 90. I dropped him a point from last time because he befriended Drake.
Oh, look at you. Wow.
Drake for like 19 years.
Wow. No, so that's a problem. I kept him the same because I wasn't fazed by the Drake situation. And he's MVP, and they're about to win.
Both have him at GOAT status.
He's the GOAT.
Somehow the internet just won't get on board with our GOAT ratings for Lamar. They still have him at an all-star level at 67%. Yeah, they certainly will.